Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young hanging out with you today. Mark should be back very soon. So thanks for letting me hang out with you, and glad you're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. One of the things that's been a big news this week, or one of the big items in the news, I should say, has been the CBS settlement with President Trump. So I wanted to get the details, so I reached out to Nick Fondacaro. You know Nick. He is the Newsbusters Associate Editor. Nick, thanks for joining us here in St. Louis today.
Thanks for having me on to hang out with you, Brad.
So tell me a little bit about the terms of the settlement. Generally speaking, in my law practice during the day, I know that that suing someone like the media or suing for defamation from the media is oftentimes legally challenging and difficult, yet President Trump has prevailed here. Tell us what the settlement terms are.
So basically, it's about $16 million up front with a possibility of it reaching upwards of $30 million after including money spent on advertisement, public service announcements, and some other support for conservative causes from the network in the future. But it's $16 million up front. I believe some of it goes to cover his President Trump's legal fees, and then the rest of it goes to the presidential library.
Right. So President Trump himself isn't really going to pocket a penny from the settlement.
None at all.
And one of the terms that I thought was very interesting, Nick, and I'd like your opinion on it and to see how things go forward. But obviously, when we deal with the mainstream media, they're biased. They want to take every slant and angle against conservatives or Republicans or Christians that they possibly can. And yet, I believe that Paramount agreed that in all future interviews with eligible U.S. presidential candidates, that 60 Minutes will release the full transcript, the full unedited transcript of those interviews.
Exactly. That is one of the big terms of this agreement here. And it's worth noting that this whole case could have been avoided if CBS would have just released the full unedited transcript from the beginning, but they refused to do it, their interview with Kamala Harris. And people need to question why they held on that this long, and they took it all the way until someone in the government to force them to bring out the full unedited transcript. First, that got released online, and then CBS had to come do it themselves. And people have to ask themselves why. And it's
yes,
because CBS wants to defend the Democratic ticket by making them look good.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that they literally had to pay $16 million, maybe as high as $30 million, depending on what other expenses might be coming into the settlement terms, but had to pay all this money, and they did so just to protect and to not release the transcript of Vice President Word Salad, and they took this position when they could have just released it to begin with.
Exactly, this whole thing could have been avoided, and now what you're seeing is a lot of words coming out from anonymous sources from inside CBS, from their journals, who
yes,
are very upset that they caved in this way, and now they have to make this change. But it's like, why are they upset? Because they want to be able to run defense for the Democrats, and now this is going to be able to expose them for when they do cut out certain rambling moments, or if a candidate sort of gets off message and they kind of want to stitch it up for them a little bit.
Yeah, there's been a lot of staffers who have been vocal, sometimes anonymous, sometimes not so anonymous, mm-hmm, but the staffers have been very vocal in opposition to this settlement, haven't they?
Exactly. And a lot of it goes because they don't want any of the people to see what goes on behind the scenes. They don't want to see the sausage get made. And that's why you saw this case get settled and a lot of other cases get settled before even discovery happens. Because as we saw with the CNN defamation suit, that the trial that just wrapped up earlier this year, where CNN lost, and MSNBC settlement back in April, that we get a peek behind the scenes to see their internal messages via discovery. And that's when it gets exposed, how their coverage is driven by their personal
yes,
animosities and affinities towards their political narratives and who they are talking about in the news.
Yeah, we had, I don't know if you recall, but St. Louis sued the Rams and the NFL several years ago, and that case settled for $750 million on the eve of trial, right before trial started. But really what forced the settlement was that the NFL owners didn't want to have their internal emails and text messages released for open public consumption at trial. And I thought the same thing was probably applying here, that if this case went to trial, you would see emails showing just how vitriolic and biased all of these CBS staffers are, all of these 60 Minute staffers, and all of that would have been laid bare had this case proceeded to trial.
Yeah, I believe the CBS case didn't even make it to discovery, because if you get information discovery, there are chances that it could leak. There could be a problem with the clerk system where inadvertently information gets released. That's how I got some of the information from the CBS defamation trial, is because the clerk's office had a little bit of a hiccup when they were putting up documents and stuff wasn't redacted properly. And we were able to get some of CNN's internal messages out there and some deposition testimony where a CNN employee admitted that when they reported about Zachary Young, the guy they defamed, they said they didn't actually have any proof that he committed any sort of crime.
Oh, yeah. Getting a peek under the skirt of the mainstream media really reveals the bias that so much of conservatives we know, but so much of mainstream America seems to not understand. But here's the question I want to go to next. We're talking to Nick Fondacaro. He's the Newsbusters Associate Editor. And Nick, back in 1964, there was this landmark Supreme Court case called New York Times versus Sullivan. You know the case. And in New York Times versus Sullivan, it really shaped the legal landscape for lawsuits dealing with defamation when it comes to public officials. And it showed legally what had to be proved, which in this case was an actual malice standard, meaning that the statements were literally made with the knowledge that these statements were false. I'm only giving that as an explanation, Nick, to say this. As groundbreaking as the New York Times versus Sullivan was on the legal landscape, do you see not just the 60 Minutes settlement, but the MSNBC settlement and the other settlements that are probably going to happen in the near future? Do you see these as reshaping the landscape moving forward when it comes to the way the mainstream media wants to slant the news against President Trump?
Oh, absolutely, because I have a feeling that the previous ABC defamation suit had maybe something to do with the Terry Moran situation with him getting fired.
Yes.
Because if those messages are what he was willing to say out loud in public, his posts on X, imagine what he's saying in private messages. And then those can absolutely come into case of actual malice and be able to be there. So that's why they fired him, so he's not a liability for them. And hopefully what we're starting to see is that these executives are going to be putting more of a scrutiny on their newsrooms to be like, you guys are not being objective. You guys are not being dispassionate. You are very passionate, and you're just going to say these things, and you're going to get us in a lot of trouble. You're going to cost us a lot of money. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these cases that are coming up, is not even these networks saying things about public officials. Like the CNN case, this was a private individual, a Navy veteran, who was trying to help people get out of Afghanistan. And in the MSNBC case, it was just a doctor who had some contracts with immigration officials, and that they were running around claiming that he was the uterus collector, essentially defaming him. And that case got settled before it went to trial. But this is all of these things that we're seeing now, and it's private individuals who are really stepping up to hold these places accountable. We saw this a few years ago with Nick Sandman, and then Kyle Rittenhouse has said that he's interested in going after some people. I'm not too sure he's pushed anything yet, but we also have Zachary Young. I got out of a defamation hearing case today. He's going after the AP, Puck News, U.S. News and World Report for other sort of fallout reporting about the CNN defamation case, where they were a little bit loose, allegedly, with some of the facts of his case, and sort of smearing the trial a little bit. So
We're talking to Nick Fondacaro. He's with Newsbusters. He's an associate editor there. And Nick, I'm going to ask you to speculate on something. We didn't really talk about this ahead of time, but whenever I see this pattern of conduct where mainstream media, news editors, and producers reveal their vitriolic bias in emails and text messages, and then that becomes litigation fodder to show actual malice. Do you think that some of these media types, the producers and executives at the networks, do you think they might be inclined to want to start using Snapchat or WhatsApp or Signal or Wickr or any of these apps that allow messages to be either encrypted or destroyed just to keep, because we know they're always going to be vitriolic against conservatives and Christians and Republicans. But do you think they might start wanting to use these more secretive apps in order to make sure that their email messages don't become litigation fodder?
Yeah, they already do. Signal is a very big app used by journalists to speak with sources. WhatsApp as well. These are very common apps that are used in media to speak with sources. I believe the ones that were being used in the CNN one in particular, I believe was their internal Slack message system, which that's more of a workflow sort of place where you have different teams sort of talking to each other. I'm not too sure if they have the ability to delete stuff. They probably do. But for the most part, it might come out if they start doing those things that, hey, this it might get leaked. It'd be like, oh, hey, why don't you want people to ever see what it is you're saying? And it definitely becomes, when you do see these messages, they are extremely revealing and expose their hatred. Like with the CNN case, you had editors egging on Marquardt saying, go get him, cowboy, and saying to him, like, oh, Mr. Young has a punchable face and all of this stuff where in their private messages, they show the actual and expressed malice. Mm.
Wow. Well, I if that happens, I will find this fascinating because of the way the news media beat up Pete Hegseth for using Signal app. I would be thrilled to point out the hypocrisy if they start using similar types of apps. Nick Fondacaro, Newsbusters associate editor. Where can folks find you online if they want to follow what you and Newsbusters writes about?
They can follow us at newsbusters.org.
Very good, Nick. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you, sir. Hey, when we come back from this break, I did some research today, and I looked into some of the quotes from the new mayoral candidate in New York, Zohran Mamdani, and I found some interesting quotes because, to me, this is staggeringly concerning that the largest city in the country, the financial center of the planet, is perhaps on the precipice of electing a socialist to be the next mayor. We'll cover that next. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. Stick around. Brad Young in for Mark Reardon today. And of course, it was a stunning, stunning New York City election outcome when it looks like Zohran Mamdani came out on top on the ranked choice voting. Now, he's not mayor yet. There's going to be another election. He may or may not win. But what scares me, not scares, that's not the right word. What concerns me, I'm not scared by it, but I am concerned by how gullible people are in New York City to vote for someone who is a socialist. Now, it's interesting. People like to quote fact checkers today. And one of the so-called fact checkers is PolitiFact. And if you look at their record of so-called fact-checking, it's very biased. In other words, the fact-checker itself is biased. And so that's why I don't let that's like citing Wikipedia as an authority. No, it's not. Anybody can change it. And the founder of Wikipedia is a progressive. So that's not necessarily fact-checking. And PolitiFact is the same way. But here's what got me on this topic. When I went to PolitiFact, they had at the top this so-called fact-checking that Mamdani is a communist. Now, I'm going to give them a little bit of slack on this. You know, there's a difference between a communist and a socialist. And Communist is one that calls for a one-party system. A communist is one that calls for government ownership of everything, whereas socialism is more government ownership of businesses, and there's also still a two-party system. So there are some minute differences between a communist and a socialist. But PolitiFact was so adamant in defending Mamdani, saying these are just right-wing extremists, they're calling him a communist. Well, I'll give it that he's not necessarily a communist, but he clearly is a Marxist socialist. And so then I wanted to do some research to find out things that he has said that leads me to that conclusion. These aren't things that I'm just speculating about. These are his words. And he has said many things on, and in fact, I want to go to, John, can we go to clip number 16? And I want you to hear Mamdani himself talking about this idea of free housing.
Why do so many people end up homeless? It's not because there aren't enough homes to go around. There are plenty of empty homes. No, it's because housing people is not the primary goal of developers or landlords. Their goal, simply put, is to make a profit. If we want to end the housing crisis, the solution has to be moving toward the full decommodification of housing. In other words, moving away from the status quo in which most people access housing by purchasing it on the market, and toward a future where we guarantee high-quality housing to all as a human right.
Now, there's a couple of words there I want
Good
you to pick
grief.
Up on. Can you imagine saying that?
How dare they want to make a profit?
Oh, I know. It's evil. It's evil to make a profit. But he used a fancy word, a decommodification. And I wanted to pick up on that word because, listen, I'm in the legal business. We use big words sometimes to obfuscate what we're really doing. Okay?
Yes.
So you have a ding, ding, ding on that one, Sue?
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, we do. Okay, we do. I get that. But he's using the word decommodification to hide what he's really saying.
Yep.
And what he's trying to hide is this idea, you heard his own words, but Mamdani is basically stating there should not be any private ownership of housing.
Yep.
That's a scary proposition.
That is downright frightening.
Yes. It is frightening because then what you're saying is that if you're a billionaire or if you're a homeless guy, you should have the same level of housing, regardless of freedom of choice, freedom of where you want to live, freedom of how you want to live. He's talking about objectively eliminating capitalism from the entire housing industry. And he was overwhelmingly supported by rich, wealthy, well-to-do New York young people whose parents are all capitalists who were voting for this socialist.
It's disgusting. Now, does he have a lot of money? Is he a trust fund baby? Is he something? That's what I would kind of like to know. Because I heard that somewhere, but yeah, I haven't looked it up.
Yeah, his family is interesting. His father was an academic, a far-left academic, and I can't remember. I think his mother was a bureaucrat. So I don't know that he himself comes from enormous money.
Okay.
But once he has started to get popular, people have been donating money to his campaign.
Great.
Which has really propelled him into the public eye.
Idiots.
But yet all of his ideas are just rank and file socialism. Here's another quote from him. And I'm going to read this quote because I want to emphasize certain parts of it. This is what he said last year when he was addressing the young democratic socialists of America. These are his words. Right now, if we're talking about the cancellation of student debt, if we're talking about Medicare for all, these are issues which have the groundswell of popular support across this country. But there are also issues that we firmly believe in, whether it's BDS, which is boycott, divest, and sanction, whether it's the end goal of seizing the means of production, where we do not have the same level of support at this very moment, unquote. So he literally quotes from the Communist Manifesto, which is seizing the means of production. Now, if you look at World War II, there's two reasons why we won World War II. Number one was the bravery of our soldiers. Mm-hmm. Number two was the strength of our capitalistic society.
That's right.
we were able to put more jets in the air, more ships on the sea, and more tanks on the ground. If you look at why Russia lost, Russia lost because they could not match the manufacturing capability.
Yep.
And look at Russia now. Russia now can't even build enough weapons to defeat a second-rate country like Ukraine, and they cannot even manufacture to replace their warfare armaments, whether it's missiles, whether it's ammunition, or whether it's tanks, or even drones. They can't make enough unless they get Western technology.
There you go.
Which comes from capitalism. Okay. So if you look at the words of Mondami, he literally wants to take control, to centralize the economy, and to seize the means of production. Folks, that is textbook socialism.
Yep.
And yet, all of these kids in New York are embracing him. These kids' parents are capitalists. They're not getting money any other way than through capitalism, and yet they're using their elevated, privileged, if I can use that term, status to support someone who wants to destroy the very families where these young people come from.
It's outrageous. It's just outrageous.
It's outrageous. And I don't know if he's going to win the mayoral race or not. I don't know that. But I can tell you, I hope his ideas do not gain traction outside of the city of New York. Hey, I've got to take a break here. More coming up next. In fact, after the break, we're going to talk to Congressman Bob Onder about the big, beautiful bill that passed today and where Congress is going next after they've secured this literal economic linchpin of the Trump agenda next. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon. More on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. Glad you are with us on this pre-4th of July holiday, so to speak. And joining us is the very, very busy Congressman Bob Onder from Missouri's 3rd District. Congressman, it's been short on sleep for you recently, hasn't it?
Well, it sure has. Reminds me of my medical residency back many moons ago. We're up all night last night, working hard. But at the end of the day, we were able to win a historic victory for the American people.
Right. And people have talked about this as being not just the big, beautiful bill, but obviously big in terms of the president's agenda. Why is it that this bill is such a plank or a centerpiece of President Trump's agenda for his second term?
Well, yeah, this was an enormous part of his agenda. First of all, on November 5th, he ran on making us safer, securing our borders, completing the border wall, building detention facilities and the infrastructure so that we could detain and deport criminal illegal aliens, but also to renew the Tax Cut and Jobs Act to avoid the largest tax increase in U.S. history on the American people, also to restore sound and sane energy policy. We did all of these things and at the same time cut $1.6 trillion in mandatory spending, something that has never been done before. So it was at times a rocky road, but at the end of the day, we got it done and we are fulfilling our promises as Republicans to the American people.
You know, it's interesting. The mainstream media, Congressman, have been reporting consistently for several weeks now that this represents a $4.5 billion tax cut for the wealthy. But in reality, the tax provisions that are the focus of a lot of this ire, they're in place right now. So the failure to renew them would have been a tax increase, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as much as the Democrats talk about tax cut for billionaires, the fact is, if these tax cuts expired, every American family would face a tax increase in Missouri, about 20%, about $1,600 for the average American family. And actually, had the Tax Cut and Jobs Act expired, had we not passed the Big Beautiful Bill, the working class and the middle class would have paid a higher percentage of the federal tax bill than by us delivering today. So there's a lot of demagoguing on the Democrat side. I think Hakeem Jeffries gave a record long speech with lies and misrepresentations about the bill. But at the end of the day, the question was whether we were going to impose on the American people the largest tax increase in U.S. history. I believe every single Democrat voted yes, and all but a couple of Republicans voted. I'm sorry, every single Democrat voted yes, we would impose the tax increase. We Republicans retained tax relief for hardworking Americans. Mm-hmm.
We are talking to a third district congressman right here from Missouri, Bob Onder. Full disclosure, Bob Onder is my doctor, or at least it was previously before he went to Washington. But Congressman, here's the other question I have for you. Right now, everyone has just heard rhetoric after rhetoric after rhetoric from the Democrats about how this is going to be terrible. It's going to destroy our country. It's going to make dogs and cats live together. It's going to be a biblical proportion disaster. OK, we've heard that. And yet, once regular Americans start to see the effects of this bill, for example, the removal of taxation on tips and some other things that are really going to help blue-collar workers, middle-class Americans, once they see the results of this bill rather than just listening to the rhetoric, don't you think that the results of this bill will be far more popular than what is being presented today?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. President Trump tells the story that he was talking to a waitress on the campaign trail, and she said, you know, I don't think I should have to pay tax on my tips. That gave him the idea. Also, no tax on overtime, and then tax relief for senior citizens on Social Security. But again, tax relief for every American. And that will, the results will speak for themselves. The Trump economy will continue to buzz along. The job creation this month was just released, exceeded expectations. We are in a low inflation, high growth period of time in our history, despite all the turbulence on the world stage. And I think this renewal of this tax cut bill, and along with the fiscal responsibility of cutting $1.6 trillion of mandatory spending, I think it's going to supercharge this economy. And I think the American people will be very, very happy with the results.
It's interesting that we're talking about the economy here, Congressman, because at the beginning of the year, once President Trump took office and started implementing some tariff negotiation strategies, we were told over and over and over again by the left that this would destroy our economy, that our economy would go into a tailspin. That never happened. We were also told, even as recently as earlier this week, that jobs numbers are down, inflation's going to be terrible. And yet when we saw the numbers today, the job growth in this country has exceeded expectations. So at what point, and I know this is hard to guess, but at some point, rather, will mainstream America figure out that the rhetoric they're hearing is false when what they're seeing in front of them is solid economic growth and more economic prosperity for our country?
Yes, I think already the American people are seeing that. They're seeing through the media's lies, the Democrats' hyperbole. Again, we really have a high economic growth, high job creation, low inflation economy. I remember my first few weeks, it was almost surreal. The Democrats back in January, we were talking about nothing but egg prices. I mean, here egg prices had gone up under President Biden over the last few months of his administration, and President Trump was sworn in about 2 days, and they were complaining about eggs. Commodities have gone up in price, but they have leveled off. I think sensible energy policy will lead to lower gas prices, lower utility costs. I think in every area of the economy, we're going to see really great results for the American people. As Donald Trump has said, we are the hottest country on earth right now, and we're going to keep it that way.
The other thing, too, we're here on July 3rd. Obviously, tomorrow is the celebration of our country's birth, literally. And polling, and again, I hear this coming from the mainstream media that, oh, that people are not proud to be Americans. And yet, when I look at the actual polling data, it's only the Democrats that are not proud to be Americans today. But when you look at this economy that's growing, the robust economy, we've got a plan to improve the economy. We're strong on a national defense standpoint. Right now, we've got the potential for peace in the Middle East, something that's never been achieved before. We're on the cusp of something great. Other than partisan politics, Congressman, why would any American not be proud to be an American today?
Well, I think people are. And I think we're really seeing a resurgence in patriotism among our young people. We're seeing the military for the first time in many years meet its recruiting numbers. You really got to think, as a young person watching the ineptitude of Joe Biden as commander in chief, the horrific pullout from Afghanistan, who would want that? Who would want to serve under such a commander in chief? But President Trump is exerting confidence, love of country, and of course, an emphasis on peace and stability on the world stage. That is drawing, record numbers of young people into our armed services. But yeah, we see it everywhere. We see people flying their flags. We see people wearing red, white, and blue. Here in DCA Airport, no haven of conservative Republicanism with people wearing MAGA hats. So it is morning in America, as Ronald Reagan once put it. We are truly making America great again, and I can't say how honored I am to be representing Missouri and to be on President Trump's team.
We're talking to Missouri Congressman Bob Onder. And Congressman, last question. I know this reconciliation bill has been truly the focus on Capitol Hill for quite some time. Now that this is behind you, and once you get a chance to take a nap and catch up on your rest, what's next for Congress?
Well, yeah, I think the next thing is to work on the budget. And, in the reconciliation bill, we had a unique opportunity to reform mandatory spending programs like Medicaid, like food stamps, like some of the student loan programs. And now we're going to the so-called discretionary spending. That's the budget we are supposed to pass every year, although Congress hasn't passed a budget in a long time. We need to restrain spending. We already passed a rescission bill that President Trump submitted, where the House cut $9.3 billion from discretionary spending. But we've got a lot more work to do if we're going to restore fiscal sanity. We have a $37 trillion debt. We've got to work on that every day to get spending in line.
Well, drink some chamomile tea, get some good rest, Congressman, and thank you for all that you're doing for Missourians in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for having me. Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day. We'll be back right after this on The Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today, 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to The Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young, you're winding up the show today. Thanks for sticking around with us. We've covered a lot of stuff today. Earlier in the show, we talked a little bit about the P. Diddy verdict, and I've covered all of the ins and outs of the legality of it, but I want to touch on a different angle of the P. Diddy story, which I think is even more important than how much time is he going to serve or what did the jury think. I want to elevate this to about a 30,000-foot level. And to start with that, though, let's go to the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So the one thing I'm going to leave you with this. We are not nearly done fighting. We are just getting started. To win this and to defeat the prosecutors from the Southern District of New York takes effort from beginning to end. Today was a major, major step in the right direction, but we fight on and we're going to win, and we're not going to stop until he walks out of prison, a free man, to his family.
Sue, think back to when you heard the OJ verdict. What did you think? Now, we didn't rehearse this ahead of time. What did you think when you heard the OJ verdict?
Well, your heart drops because the man is guilty, and you're just horrified by the entire thing.
Yeah. My thought then, this was years ago, my thought when it came down was, what the hell is wrong with the jury? Okay? I mean, sorry to put it that way.
But you're right.
But what is wrong with them? This guy is obviously guilty.
Yes.
They were trying to make a social statement by acquitting him of obvious murder. He butchered two individuals, and he walked. What the hell is wrong with the jury?
Yes.
And then, when the crowds were cheering OJ, I thought, what the hell's wrong with you?
Now, I remember that, now that you say it. It's like the world turned upside down.
Right, exactly, because I thought you are cheering
a criminal.
Not just a criminal,
a murderer.
A murderer. You're cheering this man who murdered his wife and murdered
the
another
mother
person.
Of his kids.
He murdered them,
yeah.
And you're cheering them. And I got to tell you, I felt the exact same way when the verdict came down and the people were cheering outside of the courthouse. I thought, what in the hell is wrong with you for doing this? Because it casts a bigger shadow on our culture.
Yes.
Because we've completely obliterated the lines between famous and infamous. You know, those things used to mean two different things. If someone's famous, they've done something good. If someone's infamous, they've done something
bad,
right?
Yes.
But in our culture today, we have merged those two words to say that if you're a celebrity, it doesn't matter if you're good or bad, we're going to cheer you because you are a celebrity.
And having listened to even just a little bit of some of the testimony that these people were saying, I mean.
I know. Here's a man who, with P. Diddy, here's a man who abused women.
We have, if nothing else, you can watch the video of him dragging her by
yes.
her hair in a hotel.
Committing, we don't even know
yes.
all of the acts and debauchery that this man has either committed or directed, and then people are cheering him. Why?
Oh.
Because he's famous, okay?
Oh.
And to me, that is really something. I've got a niece who's just now 16, and I've asked her many times, what do you want to be? And she always tells me the same thing. I want to be an influencer.
Oh, gosh.
And I say, why? Why do you want? Number one, what is an influencer? I mean, I know what it is,
right.
but I ask her, what is an influencer? She can't define it. And number two, she can't define it. And number two, she just says, I want to be rich and famous.
Oh, gosh.
And so the point being is we used to admire firefighters,
yeah.
police officers,
yes.
astronauts, okay? Because why? Because they did something noble
yes.
and worthwhile and beneficial and self-sacrificial,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we admired them for it. And now we admire debauchery as long as they're loaded and they've got a lot of followers on Instagram. And we admire them as a culture, even though what they do is despicable, it's reprehensible, and it represents debauchery on a scale that we've never seen before because of his degree of wealth. And now he's being praised. And to, part of me wants to say it's the fault of the kids. But you know what I realize? It's really the fault of the parents.
Yep, that's how it's getting there.
Because as parents of children of this age, where is the guidance to say, do something valuable with your life? What value
meaning.
Is a meaning of substance,
yes.
of self-sacrifice,
yes.
of putting other people first? Where's any of those values when you're some sort of a TikTok influencer?
And you
There's
know
nothing
what?
In there.
Working hard and even something that's physical labor or just good, clean work for the benefit of others and yourself, whatever it is, hard work is kind of what keeps people sane, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And if you don't have meaning and you don't have a purpose, then you can flitter off anywhere, and
yep.
that is not good.
Exactly.
For you.
Exactly. But it's that sense of purpose and accomplishment
yes.
that this country, the bedrock of this country was built upon.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like that's slipping away culturally in America. Because these parents, if you're a parent today of a small child and their statement to you is they want to grow up to be an influencer, teach them what it means to be self-sacrificing.
Yeah.
Teach them what it means to work hard and accomplish something,
yes.
and that there's more to life than being rich and famous. Because at the end of the day, and I'm not trying to preach a sermon, but
no.
there's a phrase, a biblical phrase, which is wood, hay, and stubble, meaning it all burns up.
Yep.
And if you are a rich celebrity, there is nothing of tangible value in that.
It isn't.
And yet there even isn't. Adults today were dancing with baby oil outside of the Diddy verdict of the courthouse, celebrating that he was released. And listen, from a legal perspective, I've been following this very closely because I knew that 97.1 or Camo X or other places are going to ask me to analyze it. But at the end of the day, I don't really care how much time Diddy does or how much time he doesn't do, how much time he spends in prison. I'm more concerned, like we heard with the defense attorney cheering on, this is a day to celebrate. That's why I wanted to play that quote. This is a day to celebrate. I'm more concerned with the parts of our culture that are celebrating debauchery today.
Yes.
For the sole reason that he's rich and famous. That's all it is. What else has Diddy done? Nothing. He's rich and he's famous. And because of that, we're going to sing his praises when he's been convicted. We've seen it before our eyes. He's been convicted of debauchery. So I don't really care how much time he serves. And I'm thinking in prison, even if he goes to one of those country club prisons, he's getting some punishment. But at the end of the day, he's one man. But this obsession with celebrity and richness in our country, when we should be aspiring to greater values than that.
And you're absolutely right. And none of this is good for these victims.
No, not at all. Another example of women who were sexually brutalized.
Yes.
They described it to the jury, and a jury of 8 men and 4 women said, "We don't believe you."
I cannot tell you the damage that does.
How could you watch the video and not believe a woman saying, "He sexually abused me"? It's outrageous.
I
could spend another 10 minutes on it, but I won't because we're coming up on a hard break here. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon today. Thanks for letting me hang out. I'm sure Mark will be back soon on 97.1 FM Talk.